Better Buildings for Humans is powered by Advanced Glazings, makers of the Solera line of products. Solera is the leading glass glazing made specifically for architectural daylighting and with extreme insulation performance. Learn more at advancedglazings.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Better Buildings for Humans. I'm your host, Joe Manchevsky. This is the podcast where we talk about the impact that the buildings that we live, work, and play in has on our health, our wellness, our productivity, and our general joy of being alive. Today, I am lucky enough to have Sahar Abdelwahab from the Leicester School of Architecture in England. And she is a daylighting expert, and I always love talking to people who also have a passion for daylighting the way that I do. Hello, Sahar, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. Thank you. Thanks for the introduction, and thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's an honor, and it's a pleasure to have you as a guest. Let's start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners, talk a little bit about where you're working now and the history that led you to come there, and of course, tell us about the kind of research that you're doing these days.
Okay. Currently I'm holding a lecturer position at DeMont University, Leicester School of Architecture in the UK. My role is between teaching and research. And my research area is about sustainable building design and building performance, with a focus on daylight in buildings in particular, with also some research on glare perception, visual discomfort analysis, facade systems, kinetic and static, user control of shading elements. My background is architecture fundamentally. So that's my bachelor and my master degrees in architectural engineering. And then I did my PhD. It was a joint program between Egypt and the UK. It was funded actually by the British Council in Cairo. And I was based in the UK for a while in Nottingham University doing my data collection and data analysis. And again, it was in the same area of sustainable building design and building performance, but from a perspective of, you know, simulation. So I looked at modeling daylight and how this would impact energy performance by testing different facade types as well. And then after that, I got a postdoctoral position. It was through a fund as well. So I spent time at the University Catholic de Louvain in Belgium, and I did some research, you know, in the similar area, but looking from a perspective of people perception. So we did some analysis on, window glazing, electrochromic glazing in particular, to see, you know, how the daylight can be altered or affected by those types of systems. And now, as I said before, I'm based in the UK, in Leicester School of Architecture.
Oh, wonderful. I read an interview that you did. I stumbled across it in Women in Lighting. And that's why I reached out to you after reading that interview, because you're doing some really interesting things. I would love for you to describe what you mean by user perception and control of facade systems. Explain it and tell us a little bit about your research and maybe some of your findings.
Yeah. Well, I was like working on this area of daylight performance and energy performance since 2014, but with a focus on, you know, merely the physical environment. So looking at the temperature, looking at the light, and see how this would impact the building performance, right? But then I was kind of introduced to this area of, you know, user control and interventions of indoor spaces and how this can significantly impact the way we evaluate our buildings or we estimate the overall performance. And it was interesting to see how the interventions and how the controlling pattern of building occupants would significantly change the daylight performance. For example, if they interact with their shading elements, and this kind of interaction, it doesn't necessarily has to be to control, you know, the physical environment, like controlling excessive light or controlling excessive heat, for example. But at the same time, there are other factors that may affect our perception as human being. And this area really interested me. So I started like a couple of years ago looking at, you know, this kind of research area, looking at the user control and how the interaction between users and building systems would impact, you know, the overall performance of buildings.
Okay. Yeah, I recently interviewed a practitioner named Marcel Herman, who had some really interesting things to say on the psychological and sort of the anthropological side of user control, right?
Yeah.
All the little social hierarchies and those sorts of things that impacted user control. I was absolutely mesmerized by all the things that impact.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's good to see that even like building standards and codes started to highlight this point, the fact that considering user control as a significant kind of factor would impact our calculations, because at some point it may or may not mislead our judgment of how the building would perform in terms of, you know, when we have a new design and we try to kind of test the performance in early design stages. So having this element that we're not fully understand what is going on, so these interactions and these dynamics of control, we're not still fully aware of what is going on, but it's very important to consider this element to see how, you know, and understand, try to predict maybe how people would interact with their systems and therefore how this would have an influence on the overall performance.
So do you think you'll be modeling human control, or will it be a scenario where you have to do multiple models to depending on how people might potentially interact?
Yeah, well, actually, there are many trials. So some research actually looked at this in particular, trying to model, you know, user interactions. So they may do some field studies, for example, and kind of monitor how people would interact with their building systems for a long time, and then kind of analyze and trying to understand these dynamics. For me, I tried to do a small study. It was part of my PhD, looking at user control, but from a perspective of daylight calculation. So we had like different scenarios, and those scenarios were driven actually from the existing literature. So for example, a study would conclude that this threshold of lighting would trigger people to kind of close their blinds. And then we took those thresholds and we tried to model, you know, a type of how the shading patterns or the shading control would be through the year, and then how this would impact eventually daylight and energy performance.
What about opening the blinds? A lot of the research shows that once blinds get closed, they tend to stay closed. Did you discover anything in terms of any sort of incentive, or what makes people open the blinds again?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually one of the scenarios that we have tested, because some research noticed that when we close the blinds, if it's manually operated, so we're less likely to kind of interact with them again, because maybe we are far away from the window, or maybe there are multiple, you know, office or an open office space where are many people can, you know, have different preferences. And also the intervention. So maybe they close the window, the blinds, and then react. And this is the difference actually between the passive and, you know, the active users. So we're not the same. Some people would actively kind of interact with their shading elements during the day based on the needs and the lighting conditions. Other, they just prefer to close the blind, rely on artificial lighting most of the day. So it really depends also on, you know, the subjective elements.
Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to steal another quote from that interview, the one with women in lighting. And here's your quote. I've been working on projects concerning facade design with respect to both physical and non-physical motivations of daylight control. let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the difference between physical and non-physical motivations of daylight control. How would you explain that to an architect?
So this research, actually, it's a recent one that I did. And again, it was driven by, you know, this curiosity to understand more about user control and their motivations to control window systems in particular. So we understand from the existing research that there are physical factors, which is like purely physics of, you know, the light and temperature, noise levels, for example, that would trigger people to interact with their blinds or shading elements, right? But on the other hand, we have other psychological or physiological factors, so we call it non-physical. It varies, actually, and it's very subjective. It can be dependent on the age or the gender or the view position. So again, if I look forward towards the window or in another direction, it would also be affected by our sensitivity, which is again different. It differs from a person to another. Again, there are some elements that were found to be significant. So for example, seeking the outside view or having the connection to outside view is a very important factor. Also visual privacy. So the perception of you of the visual privacy can be very critical, especially when it comes to certain, you know, cultures or religion. So this cultural factor also may play a role on how we perceive, you know, the indoor environment, how we would keep the connection to outside, and how we perceive our visual privacy. Security also can be a reason. So, you know, all of these factors can impact in a way or another the way we interact with shading elements. And you cannot really predict what is going on, because some people would prioritize maybe some elements over others. So they would, for example, compromise a very important factor because they want to achieve visual privacy or to maintain the connection with outside view. So it really, it depends. And the last study focused mainly on visual privacy. And we did some experiments using online surveys, and it was actually distributed during the pandemic time. So we knew that people would be working from home most of the time. And therefore, we wanted to see how their visual privacy would be impacted based on, you know, the physical environment, based on, you know, their culture. So we focus mainly on these cultural differences between two groups. And one of the groups was actually the Arab group, who may have a high value for visual privacy as historically evidenced. So we wanted to see how this parameter in particular would influence the way that people interact with their shading elements.
That is fascinating. And it's complex. It's very complex. And that's what makes it so fascinating. I love it. All right. Let's talk about a paper that I found that's entitled "The Balance Point Between Daylight and Thermal Performance Based on Exploiting the Kaleida Cycle Typology." What a lovely title, first of all. Can you explain the objectives of this research for us in non-academic language? And please make sure you include a definition of the Kaleida Cycle Typology and why you believe it's valuable in daylighting.
Okay. Well, so this research, it was actually one of the very, you know, early studies that I did before in collaboration with other an institution back in Egypt. And, you know, in Egypt, we have like different climatic conditions than UK for sure. So it's hot arid climate, and we have like massive solar radiation and significant heat gain from outside. So the idea was to how to develop a facade system that is responsive, and it can, you know, provide this control over the external condition, extreme conditions. And the idea actually came from, you know, the solar screens that used to be historically used in old buildings back in Cairo. So, for example, we have this wooden element called the mashrabeya, and it's very intense kind of solar screen made of wood. And it kind of filter and kind of control the amount of light coming from outside. But it has also other cultural factors like keeping and maintaining the privacy again. So the kaleidocycle, which is the terminology that we use in this paper, so it's basically a geometry. And this geometry comes from the origami. So basically, it's the art of folding papers. And there are different geometries that you can actually generate and you can kind of rotate in order to... you can play with it to have different openings, different shapes and geometry. So we saw a potential in this element or in this geometry, and we thought, why don't we use it in building facade? But in a sense that it would be kinetic, it would be responsive, and we can actually utilize this kind of movement to control the size of the opening. So if you go back to the paper, you would see actually a kind of visualization of this kaleidocycle. So it's basically like a geometry that you can rotate, axial rotation, and you can then generate different sizes. So the idea is was by this time to kind of think the system and to try to utilize a facade solar screen consisted of those components. And then we can control the rotation angle based on the amount of solar radiation that is received during the year. So we link it the movement of the element with the climatic data or the weather data of Cairo. And we kind of did some simulation to see how the how to use different openings and different sizes to control the amount of light, but at the same time to keep, you know, daylight adequate in indoor spaces. And for this item, I remember that we used different indicators like spatial daylight autonomy and annual sunlight exposure in order to see, on the other hand, how can we limit the excessive light in the south orientation in particular using this screen. So we did some analysis and actually we used kind of a genetic optimization tool to, you know, test the different rotation angle and different sizes of the string. We had many, many alternatives that we needed to narrow down in order to see how to, you know, achieve the balance between adequate daylight and at the same time have a control over excessive solar gain and heat gain. So that was the main idea. And yeah, I mean, we actually generated kind of a prototype of one ring, one-to-one, to test how, you know, applicable the model could be and how, how the material, if the material would be suitable for such a prototype or not. So we did some experiment in this area trying to kind of model and simulate the kaleidocycle units.
What about contrast ratio? Were you able to impact contrast ratio at all using this this geometry?
Not really. So the main focus was daylight and heat transfer. And that's why material component was actually one of the things that we looked at. So we tried to kind of model the solar screen using wood or using plastic, using different materials. So... and it's a 3D geometry, so it has air in between the units, which would help actually in terms of insulation. So it's not a planar or a surface. It has a depth. And that's, again, would help in kind of having this insulation between outside and inside.
Yeah, and it looks beautiful. I did see some of the images, and it also has a really interesting aesthetic as well. So I found that very fascinating. I have to change gears a little bit. I have to change subject matter because there's a bunch of things I want to cover, as I always do. In Canada and America, right? The building codes are changing. They're changing dramatically, and primarily to demand higher thermal performance of the building envelopes. It's leading to a lot of pressure to reduce the amount of glazed area on the building envelopes. Is that happening in the UK as well?
Well, currently in the UK, there is like this concern, of course, of the overheating. Again, I mean, potential risks from the climate change and the increase in temperatures during the summer. So we have actually the building regulation part O, which kind of have a guideline on the window size. It doesn't have a fixed ratio, to be honest, but it has like this guidance, which is linked to the area of the space and also the orientation. So you need to go there and check, okay, I am in the south orientation and the area of the space is XY, and then figure out the range that you can have your openings at. But the thing is, most of these kind of values or these ratios are limited, as you may know, because there is like this always conflicting requirements of having a nice window with a wide kind of access to outside view and adequate daylight also. But at the same time, you need to maintain and to keep heat gains in the summer and also maintain the heat inside building in winter. So there is like those conflicting requirements always that usually is being discussed, even in recent standards. So we don't want this kind of merely focus on energy targets, but also with a consideration. So developing something that would actually consider the fact that people would need, you know, access to outside view, and we need more daylight, more natural daylight. So this exposure is very important. But at the same time, we need again to, I would refer to the word balance. So how can we find the balance between keeping, you know, and maintaining outside view and maintaining the well exposure to natural daylight, but at the same time have an efficient energy performance in indoor spaces?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's my world. I work with highly insulating diffusers to try to shift that balance towards more light while simultaneously controlling glare. So I know that world well. Is there any sort of fear or worry in the UK that, you know, the emphasis on energy management is going to forced design to look like it did in the 1970s with the, you know, lots of opaque elements on the facade and you know, a small number of punched out windows. Is that a fear at all among the architectural community?
Yeah, I think it's a continuous conversation, to be honest. And I'm happy actually to see that some of these standards and building rating systems, for example, started to adopt elements of view. So again, they may have some quantitative requirements. Again, it's not really mature so far because we still don't fully understand how people, you know, perceive the outside view. We have different elements. So, for example, the view can be controlled or they can be, let's say, governed by many factors, including the axis, the view clarity, the content of the view to outside. So all of these aspects are being studied. So we don't have a fully understanding of how the quality view could be. But I see now trials from building rating systems. So, for example, LEED or well standard, for example, that have some elements to be considered in order to have, you know, a proper, let's say, axis or angle to the window. But yeah, I think things are progressing in the other way. So now we did sufficient research on how to, you know, have an efficient buildings in terms of the energy and a building that would maintain the heat in winter and also limit excessive heat in summer. But we now need to focus more on people and how people perceive, you know, this environment and how to create a healthy environment, but at the same time, to, you know, maintain its efficiency in terms of energy performance.
Oh, brilliant. I'm so happy to hear that. I know that the EU has an EN standard that speaks to view, providing view in their buildings. So I'm glad, obviously I'm very glad that that's not getting forgotten. And I'm glad that people recognize that it's a balancing act. Visual discomfort. You did some work on visual discomfort analysis to assist with shading design. Can you tell me which discomfort index or indices that you used and why you chose those particular ones you chose?
Well, I mean, for this, it's a bit critical because we tend, not to say like there's a certain threshold or a certain indicator that would be accurately describe visual discomfort, right? So there are many, many indicators that the studies, research studies showed to have a acceptable kind of association with subjective responses. So we have different metrics. So some studies actually relied on horizontal illuminance, whether it's direct or global. Others may use vertical illuminance outside or inside. And again, it depends on, you know, the context of the study. So some of the studies were focused actually mainly on maybe educational environment, which was the case in this paper. So we looked at architectural studios and we wanted to understand and see how can we offer a facade element that would provide a comfortable visual environment. And it was critical, you know, because in architectural studios, the students tend to move around, so they don't have one specific visual target. So they may look vertically to the whiteboard, or they may use the desks for drawings or for model making. They move around all the time. They may use their laptops. So there is like no certain view target, I would say. And that's why we did a review for the possible indices that can help us to evaluate the probability of visual discomfort. We included luminance as one of the criteria. Also some glare indices like daylight glare index or daylight glare probability, which we used eventually because it was developed actually under daylight conditions. So it was very relevant to what we were looking for. So we used actually different indicators to kind of tackle the problem of having glare sources while the students performing different activities and they have different visual targets. So this was basically the idea to have multiple indicators that may kind of lead to accurate prediction of visual discomfort.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting. You talked about the architectural students moving around, and I think it's Stefano Schivone's work that showed that we have a much higher tolerance for visual discomfort if we're moving regularly. And that makes sense, but it's interesting, you know, that keeps becoming confirmed. I'm gonna move on to the next one. You recently did some work with Peter Rutherford and Mohamed Mahoub. Did I pronounce that Mahoub?
Right.
About the trade-off, and this work was about the trade-off in daylight modeling between processing speed and prediction accuracy, which is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I believe parameter setting was a key aspect of managing this trade-off. Processing speed is absolutely the bane of our existence at Advanced Glazings. I know that Christoph Reinhardt has done some work in this area. Tell me a little bit about this research that you've done and the conclusions that resulted from that work.
Okay, so this research, we were looking mainly at daylight simulations. And we understand that there are multiple settings and input parameters that any experienced user would understand and know, which is not the case for, you know, many architects and many practitioners, right? So sometimes people just tend to stick with the default settings. without understanding really what is going on. And what we did is actually to look at some of those parameters, which is really crucial and influential when it comes to the precision and the accuracy of the outcomes. And we did some sensitivity analysis in order to see how changing those parameters would impact the accuracy of the outcomes. And the reason that we tackled those parameters in particular, because these parameters are the ones who, that consume lots of time when it comes to the calculation time. You know, Joe, when you have a building that you want to develop a design in a very early stage, you think multiple alternatives, multiple maybe shading designs. So it can be difficult if you have those multiple alternatives and you need to do some analysis, initial analysis. So it can be very time consuming to do so. So the idea was to test those parameters and try to figure out what parameters that we can use. So we may complement, let's say, compromise the accuracy a little bit to fasten the process. But we need to make sure that the outcomes won't be significantly different from the high precision setting. And then we had different recommendations based on, you know, the facade type, because the facade system and the design of the facade also play a vital role in this. Because if you have a facade with intense geometry, for example, different layers, it can consume more time. So we needed to have like a framework to guide how to trade off those simulation settings based on the facade design and also based on the stage of the design process. So for example, if you are in a very early design stage, you tend to use less precise settings, but you understand that it would give you a guidance towards what you want to achieve, but it doesn't necessarily need to be very, very accurate. Right? But you may use maybe high precision setting in the mid or in advanced design stages with when you actually deal with an advanced solution for the facade system, and then you need to test the actual performance of the facade system. So it's kind of a trade-off. That's why we included this is actually in the title of the paper, to describe the process. So it's not yes or no, and there is no absolute recommendation for these parameters, but it was just a guidance for the architects to understand what these parameters are and how to play around or trade off so you can get plausible results, let's say, based on the design of the facade and based also on the process of the design.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, I am definitely going to get my hands on that paper and share it with our daylight simulation team. I saw something else that really caught my eye. You did some work on non-visual effects of lighting on the elderly. Can you tell me a little bit about that work and what you learned in that work?
Yeah. So, well, this project is a PhD project for one of my PhD back in Egypt, and it focused mainly on non-visual effects, which is one of the very significant factors that would impact people. We call them non-visual effects of light, which can be linked to our circadian rhythm, health, and well-being outcomes. So it would affect our mood, our sleep pattern, things like this. So in this project in particular, we focused on elderly because lighting can play, again, an important role in treating some of the problems that the elderly might have. It was a review paper, so we did the literature review, particularly for the elderly, to see how the light that differ in CCT, which is the color temperature and also the intensity, can impact elderly. Also, there are some interventions that have been done in previous research. So we wanted actually to understand more about those interventions and how this actually led eventually to improving or not to improve, you know, the conditions of the L3.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. The million-dollar question, the question I ask every guest. What makes a great building? And you can answer that from whatever perspective you'd like. What makes a great building?
Well, I would say it's a very, you know, it's a very hard question to answer because there's no single answer to this. But I would say, and from my perspective and what I was recently exposed to, is the fact that a good building needs to be very efficient and it needs to have the users in the first place. So the users are the main assets of the indoor environment, right? And it becomes even more significant and more important for people, especially considering the time we spend in indoor spaces and also with other extreme conditions, for example, the pandemic and what has happened. And, you know, the other risks that we may expect in the future because of the climate change. So all of these factors would really make the focus on people in indoor spaces significant. So for me, I would say considering always people need and their individual preferences and what satisfy and please them is very important to create a healthy environment.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Sahara, before we finish up, is there anything that you'd like to share, any sort of announcements, exciting announcements, or just something new that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, yeah, there's actually a project. It's a knowledge exchange project that I would be very happy if you personally join us and the audiences as well. So it's a series of talks that Leicester School of Architecture is currently launching, and it will take place starting from the 27th of March, so this month. We will have different speakers from worldwide talking about human-centric design of indoor built environment, but from other perspectives. So we will have a talk every Wednesday tackling view, thermal, and lighting conditions and how this would impact people perception. So yeah, it's something that I'm very excited about, and yeah, I hope to see you there.
All right, wonderful. Look, thank you so much, Sahara. It was an absolute pleasure. That was a lot of fun, and we learned a whole lot today. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and yeah, see you in the talks.
For sure. Take care.
Take care. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Better Buildings for Humans. For more information on the world's best light diffusing and highly insulating glass glazing, please visit advancedglazings.com.